Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Hello, this is Ange coming to you with Little Gems on Jewellery and Life. And today I'm flying solo, but I have a lovely guest. And I'm very excited to welcome Louise Sion Ten Horn, who, as well as being one of my jewellery tutors, who I absolutely love her classes, is a jewellery designer herself. And Louise has just launched her new book, which is entitled Design for Jewellery Makers. And I was very excited to receive my copy this week, and even more excited that Louise agreed to come and do the podcast and have a chat with me. So, Louise, how are you? Don't be nervous. How are you feeling with your book just coming out?
Oh, it's all been really, really exciting. Lots of things happening on social media, and it's all been really, really good fun, really. It's nice to see people receiving their copies and telling me all about it.
That's brilliant. So I'm going to kick off by throwing you in at the deep end. Well, not so much the deep end, but just finding out a bit more about you and how you got into jewellery making.
So I actually found out that jewellery making was an actual thing when I was really young. When I was about 13, my mum read this newspaper article about a jewellery making college not too far from where I'm from in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Oh, this sounds right up your alley. You need to read that." And it was like lightning struck me. And love at first sight, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do.
So why did your mum think that was something that you should be interested in, you were interested in?
We didn't really talk about it, but it was just, we kind of just knew that was just the right thing because I liked making things, I guess. Uh-huh. I wasn't particularly into jewellery as such, but just like making things, and maybe because my dad is a metal worker, he's a welder. Okay. So maybe all those things coming together. And luckily I liked it because I had it so in my head that that wasn't what I was going to do. I didn't really investigate much more. I went to like an open day.
Okay.
Yeah, it was what got me through secondary school because I didn't like school very much.
So when did you go to jewellery college and what was it like?
17 then, so straight after secondary school. Mm-hmm. And this was a really technical college. So it was 3 years of making sort of set projects, learning to be a bench jeweler. So that means making fine jewellery. And then there was the opportunity to add an extra year design. So that was the year that I really, really loved. And 1 year internship as well.
Right. So quite a lengthy course then.
Yeah. And I'm really glad I had that really good foundation to start off in.
And then from there, did you continue studying or did you go straight into working in the industry?
Carried on where I had my internship. I stayed there for a little while and then I moved to London because one of my friends did her internships here in London. She said, "Oh, why don't you come over here?" And then I saw a job advert somewhere. I actually worked at the essay office briefly as well.
It's really interesting for me talking to you, who's someone who started jewellery from the year dot, you know, from his old young age, because most of the people that I know have come to jewellery through different pathways. And there's often that thing as thinking, oh, we're not quite trained in the same way. So sort of speaking to someone who has had more formal training, it's quite interesting to see your experience compared to, you know, people like myself.
I'm really fortunate to have had that really strong grounding, but you do learn so much on the job. Like it's jewelry for a long, long time. So it's I think the kind of nice thing was to have it at a really young age. So in my memory. So that's really, really good.
So moving on to your current situation and your current practice, where do you work? What's your studio space like?
So I'm really fortunate to be in a lovely studio space. I'm in Pullins Yard, which is in South London, and it's in a shared studio space, and there are also other web shops there. So there are ceramicists, artists, designers, woodworkers, everything.
Right.
So it's a really nice large studio with lots of daylight, and there's five of us in there, but we all work at different times, so quite often I don't see anyone in there. Like lots of mess, which is what I love doing.
Oh, brilliant. And it's always nice to have somewhere where you can leave your stuff, isn't it, and shut the door and come back and it's where you left it.
Absolutely. Because I used to work from home for the first few years when I started out on my own. Not nice for other people to leave stuff lying around, and for you it's not nice to have to tidy up. So yeah, I'm so happy to have a workshop space.
And I know you've just, obviously your book's come out and you're also a tutor, but what work are you doing yourself in terms of your own practice?
Last thing I've been working on was a really nice project this year, which was called the Recycled Jewelry, or no, it's called the Parcel Challenge, I think. So it was run by a gallery called Admiral Gallery, and they exist 25 years this year to celebrate. One of the things they did was send 10 of the designers who sell their jewelry in their shop a package of materials in a very broad sense, because they were all kind of things that would be thrown away and would be landfill, and we had to make jewelry out of them for an exhibition. So I got a very ugly plastic chrome-plated chandelier in my parcel, and I got a bunch of nitrous oxide canisters, which are the little silvery bottles you used to find by the side of the road. And so, yeah, I spent 2 months just cutting bits up and experimenting with the materials, and it was just such a joy to do. So I made a whole collection, which for me, normally I don't really make a collection in 2 months' time. It takes me much, much. Really lovely to have this freedom to just work with the materials and not worry. So the exhibition is still on at the moment. So it's Admiral Gallery.
Great. I'll get the details off you and definitely add it to the show notes so people can pop along. Yeah. So was that very different to your own work? So things that you'd make for clients or for your own collections?
A little, in the sense that the material was very different. So I tend to work in precious metal a lot. So I do sort of incorporate things like rope, and I've made a collection in rubber and different things.
Leading on to the sort of differences in your work, what made you decide to write the book?
Teaching and my own work go very, very hand in hand, which is the nice thing about working in adult education. So quite often I'll be working on something, like just doing the recycled jewellery challenge means that then my project for the students will be, let's incorporate found materials. So I always do. But the book came from, you know, every term when we teach, we come up with a different theme and different technical challenges. So there are books and books of technical challenges that we can sort of get inspiration from for us teaching our students. But I said to one of my friends, you know, why isn't there a book with just design projects that we can give to our students?
And had you ever thought about that before, or that was kind of the push that made you?
Never thought, you know, when people say, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? 5 years before that, I never would have said, oh, in 5 years' time, I see myself being. Yeah, sometimes you just have to have your eyes open and jump on the challenge and it's there. And then there was actually a call out at the time from a publisher looking for people, applied for that, but that kind of fell through then. And that opened kind of a whole world of possibilities, because some people said to me, well, you could do videos instead, or you could do a series of little books. There were all those other ideas. So it kind of went on the back burner for a little bit. I couldn't decide what to do. And then the pandemic happened. So it was actually then my boyfriend who said, when are you going to write a book? And I was like, yeah, that was kind of there. And I'd sort of been sort of keeping notes on my phone all the time for maybe 2 or 3 years.
And did you enjoy it?
I absolutely loved it. It was really? Just a kind of right kind of level of difficulty where it was just something completely new. But
right.
Just sort of manage it. And it was just, the whole thing was really exciting. I was very lucky to work with a great editor, great publishing company. Mm-hmm. They really got what I wanted to say with the book. So it was a very collaborative project, really. I was expecting it to be, your deadline is in June. You'd get it back completely transformed, but it was completely the opposite. So it was a constant sort of weekly sending a little bit of text and then getting that back completely transformed. And going, oh, I actually meant this with that bit. Or the editor would sort of bring in his ideas as well, because he really got what I was trying to say.
So it sounds like you like pushing yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit, because from making jewellery out of nitrous oxide canisters to writing a book, that's quite a spectrum of challenges.
I would write a book again tomorrow. It was just really enjoyed it. It took 2 to 3 years to the actual BT stage of it. The publishers take it for about half a year to do all the image editing and printing and everything.
Brilliant, but no, it's beautiful. And I say my copy arrived this week, and I've started clicking through it already, so it's great.
People start making. Hopefully, people share with me things that they make. I've already had one student come in this week who said, "Oh, I did the model making part of your book, and now I'm coming here to pour in wax." And that was exactly what I was hoping for, that people could prepare themselves at home. Because, you know, in the jewelry classes, everybody needs access to the tools and the machines. So there's little time to ponder and to design it. Try things out, to experiment. Hopefully with this book people will be able to do that bit.
Definitely. And I think one of the things I really like about your class and the way it's set up is that you've pushed me to think how I progress an idea, as opposed to where I would normally just have an idea, make something and leave it. I now think, oh, can I make it into something else by doing this to it or doing this to it? And also looking at other materials. So I'm already thinking, okay, what other things can I add to sort of precious metals just to make them more interesting?
Thinking not everybody, certainly I didn't know when I first started out, I didn't know that was an option. So when I went to art college, so I worked for a number of years and then I went to the Royal College of Art. That's maybe I had like 10 years of experience. And then I went to back to college basically because I felt there was more to jewelry making that I was getting. I didn't quite know what it was. So there I was exposed to all these different people who worked in different ways. And I could just see two or three people. One of them, my good friend Aurélie, she just had lots and lots of stuff around her, worked with all different kinds of materials. And I thought that is what I need to learn to do, to work like that. And then the ideas will come. But that was kind of the extent of it. So now I branch off into different areas and try out different things, as you said, you know, consider all the different materials you might use, the different techniques you could.
Yeah, and it just makes it so much more fun as well. Just
that's the thing, isn't it? It's like you want everybody to have as much fun as we're having.
Exactly. It's just, I feel like I'm playing. So in terms of being a maker, what would you say is your greatest fear?
In terms of the actual making, I don't think I'm that afraid to, you know, say like you have to break an egg to make an omelette. So I totally accept that. But one thing is that I still kind of have a little bit of that, like, oh, I need to make sure I finish it on time and finish it well. Mm-hmm. So actually allowing myself that time to play, there's always a little bit in my stomach that goes like, oh, nervous, I'm not going to finish it for the exhibition or whatever. Mm-hmm. So actually, I'm not a great planner, but I kind of look at my diary and go like, okay, I can actually spend 3 weeks or 2 months where I'm not going to think of finished pieces, but I really have to actively work it.
Yeah.
Not finishing it too quickly. So another strategy I have is to quickly finish something. Okay. I have that, and then I can go and explore because I already have some things.
Right. Okay. So then you can go back to it if you need to.
Yeah, I like that.
Kind of in the same branch of question, what brings you the most joy then from making?
Well, it's actually the same thing. So it's that exploring and experimenting that I'm then fearful of, that it takes too much time and I'm just going off into down all these different rabbit holes and things. So funny enough, the two go very, very hand in hand. But it just, like we said earlier, just gives you so much pleasure to be able to just every time you find like a little solution or a little idea, it just fires you up and it just takes over all your headspace. When you're watching something on Netflix, but actually you're thinking about, or you fall asleep, you know, you can be like, oh, I actually have to get up.
No, that's true. And it's funny, again, you've led me on to my next question, because in terms of things that inspire you, it can just be random things. For me, it, you know, might be the shape that there is between two buildings or something like that. But what would you say inspires your work, or who, or, you know, whether other creatives, you know, whether living or dead, that inspire your particular things that sort of get you excited for making?
In terms of inspiration, I just like to constantly be on the lookout and collect things, and I hang them on, like hang pictures of things on the wall in my workshop, or collect little trinkets and things. So they're kind of always around me, and then little bits of that seep in. So it could even be watching a film or reading a book, all these little bits that you love, they kind of seep in slowly, and I love kind of combining weird things you might not.
Can you give me an example?
a lot of my, yeah, it can be absolutely anything. Quite often I can't explain it. So that's kind of one of the hardest things, is to talk about my new work, kind of so subconscious about what it means. So I quite like using all these little symbolic elements that you could just enjoy them as, you know, how like charms and jewelry, you could just say, oh, they're just cute and nice to wear or just fun, or whoever gave it to you is what makes it meaningful. So all these aspects are kind of on the side of the wearer.
I guess that's it. We are the springboard, and then people take from it what they want or see into it what they want.
Sometimes it sort of rhymes with you,
yeah,
intended or aspired.
Yeah.
In terms of like people who inspire me, I love people whose work is very kind of obviously playful and light. Mm-hmm. So do you know Alexander Calder?
Oh, yes. I love his mobile.
I think every jeweler is a famous face, mobiles and artworks, mm-hmm. but he also made lots and lots of jewelry. I think he made thousands of pieces. And they're nearly all made out of wire that's been hammered out, or a sheet, and just minimal kind of sneak, if you like, lots of soldering and things. It's just kind of very playful working through. Like, I kind of like to compare it to being sketches, if you like, so mm-hmm. little sketches. They're not just to compare that. So I love that.
Yes, I went to Lisbon a few years ago, and they had a beautiful gallery there that had lots of his mobiles hanging up. And, you know, they're just, as you say, really beautiful, playful pieces. And depending on how you look at them, they'll look slightly different. And where you hang them, but yes, you know, scaled down, they could be earrings or
I love how they move with whoever is in the room.
Yeah. So what's been your favorite commission to date?
I don't do a huge amount of commissions. So it might be 3 a year or 1 in 2 years. It's a little bit like this.
So you've already told me a bit about the other materials that you use in your work, and I have seen the fabulous nitrous oxide container jewelry, but what other material do you like working with particularly? Are there others that you kind of find are your go-to?
I think one thing I like about wood is that it's just so warm and soft, and it's kind of, I guess, it always stays alive a little bit because it dries out over time. I was a little bit stuck for time, but I did start a little bit to carve some wood, and something I'd love to explore more in my designs. But quite often I'll have an idea like that. It might be 2 weeks or 5 years, and like all of a sudden I just have all the bits sitting there, and then all of a sudden the opportunity presents itself to have with your material. Also recently I was in Westminster Cathedral. I don't know if you must know Westminster Cathedral. Whenever I'm walking past it, I just always pop in because it's such a strange building with huge clash of different materials. There's all these different marbles and things. So there were these plaques that were made from I think from concrete with gold leaf on it. So that might be something I explore one day as well. So and the trick, I guess, is just to take a picture, print it out, hang it up, so it's there.
Yes. Or always keep your eyes open, always look clear. And I think it just depends on how you see it and which bits of it spark your interest. But yeah, I think it doesn't have to be a huge investment in terms of money and going to see lots of exhibitions or things. I think you can get inspiration from really simple things as well.
Yeah, and it's listening to that as well. So you might think, oh no, it's just a bit of packaging or whatever, a silly idea, but actually you need to really pay attention to that little voice. That.
And talking of listening, what do you listen to when you're working?
Just the sound of my own thoughts. But I was given a home pod at Christmas, so now I actually have access to lots of music in my workshop, so I'm listening a bit more and making playlists and things. So the kind of music I'd be listening to, I love kind of sometimes listening to really moody things like Cocteau Twins. I don't know if you know that David Yed.
Oh yeah,
absolutely adore him. He writes a lot about creativity. I find him very interesting, but he's made 2 or 3 music albums, so you can imagine. So I love listening to that kind of thing.
Yeah. So do you like to focus when you're working, or does it depend on what you're doing?
Day or what I'm doing. I quite often just forget to turn something on because I'm busy.
And in terms of advice that you would give to someone who said, Louise, I want to be a jeweler, what shall I do?
Especially when I'm teaching, I'll often ask people, you know, what brings them to the course of making, to jewelry making. And occasionally somebody will say, I absolutely love jewellery. And then my first question is always, do you also like making? Because that's one of the main requirements, I think, that you love, just making things. Even if you don't know how to do it yet, that doesn't matter. Even if you just love cooking and putting things together, that's also making. But the people who tend to not continue are the people who just love jewellery, but they, you know, love wearing jewellery.
Yeah.
love having jewellery, but they don't like making so much. I would definitely say if you love making things, it could be for you. It's really fiddly. It's metal work, which obviously, you know, requires a lot of skill. And also it needs to sit well to the body. So there's ergonomics to consider. So there's a lot to it. So something that's really challenging when you succeed is also really, really rewarding, giving it a really good go.
Yeah.
Not giving up too soon.
No, I think that's really good advice, because often you feel that if it, as you say, if you don't necessarily have the skill to bring an idea to mind, but you know that you want to make that thing, it might be tempting to just give up. But no, I think that whole perseverance thing is a big part of it, because there's always ways around it. And I think that's something else that you've taught me, is to look a bit laterally and think, okay, if you can't do it that way, if it doesn't work that way, maybe try doing this. Or
you're hitting on a really good point there. Like, it's really good to go on a course where you have a teacher or a peer to help you, and not everybody has access to that. But I, for example, I work a lot with my friend Aurelie, I mentioned earlier, so we kind of peer mentor each other. Mm-hmm. And since we discovered that was a thing, we just didn't look back. So every week we touch base, we're constantly texting each other, what do you think of this, what should I do, because it's so much easier to help someone else than it is to be somebody you can't see the tree in the woods.
Yes. Yeah.
So even if you don't have access to go on a course, it's fine. So, you know, bounce off each other.
That's a really, really good advice, because jewellery making on the whole is quite a solitary thing. We're generally on our own in the space.
That's why I love to teach, because it's a social part of my...
Yes. Well, you didn't mention that before. I'm glad you put that in now. So in terms of your jewellery preferences, what would you say that you like? Are you more a fine jewellery person or contemporary?
Honestly, love all of it.
Great.
If it's beautiful or interesting or fun, or, you know, it just, that's the thing that matters, whether it's fine jewellery or not. Yeah. You'll see in the book as well, we have like examples across the board from...
And so what do you think is your unique skill that's helped you to become successful?
I think maybe it's being the tortoise and hare story. So just every day just turning up for work, and even if I just kind of line up my tools, you know, just turning up again the next day and then doing a little bit more, or but just constantly just carrying on and being stubborn. It's a little bit of a cliche to say, just keep going.
I think it's an important cliche, because again, often people think unless you're selling loads or being seen everywhere, you're not successful. And I think success is very nuanced. It is a big part of it is how you feel about the work that you're doing, as well as whoever's seeing it. So I totally agree.
It's something I definitely had to learn. So something I kind of, since art college, I started realizing that, you know, they kind of ask you questions there.
Yeah.
So then, you know, when you leave and you leave art college and kind of found your way, I realized you can have your eggs in many baskets. So for me, that combination of teaching, which is really social, I get to share my knowledge, get to bounce ideas, to being solitary at my studio and doing exhibitions and all these things together, they kind of make the whole picture, and then having enough to live off that. So I do, but in this kind of package.
And I think it's a nice balance to have a bit of everything, because, you know, it is such a competitive industry, but being a tutor as you are and having your book and all these other things, it gives you access to other people and other opportunities. So I think that's all good. And so my final question, well, it's kind of almost final question, so I've got one more for you. What would you say you're not very good at?
I'm not very good at plenty of things, like, you know, asking the right price for your jewellery will always be a hard thing for me, I think. But talking about my designs, as I said earlier, that can be a little bit challenging as well, where you're 100% sure where the idea came. But one thing I'm really terrible at is doing the boring things.
What do you call the boring thing? The admin.
The admin is really boring, and I really, it's like painful. But the other thing could be like, I've had like 20 castings sitting on my bench for I don't know how long. And it's just torture to finish them, because in my head, as soon as I start firing, I'm like, oh, I could do this with that thing. And then I get distracted. So my strategy for that is to reward myself with tea and biscuits. Yeah. So if ever you see me gaining weight, it's probably because I had to finish a lot of castings.
I like that strategy. Yeah. I'm definitely a reward person as well. That's the only way you can get me to actually do something that I don't particularly like. So yeah. I can.
It sounds a little bit spoiled, but it's just real torture for me.
But I think that's, you know, with every job, there are bits that you're not going to like, and you have to make them palatable somehow. And biscuits, they not. Oh, that's great. So, Louise, my final thing, it isn't actually a question. It's as in a formal question about yourself, but where can people find your book if they haven't already got a copy?
I think the easiest thing is to go to my website. So my website is just my name, Louise Syrington Horn, and I've posted lots of links of various bookshops and online places where you can order it from. And if you want me to sign it for you, then you can come to my open studios from the 9th to the 11th of June. So that's Pullen's Yard. And you can always follow me on Instagram as well.
Brilliant. That's excellent. Well, I'll be bringing my copy into college next week.
I'll practice my handwriting.
But until then, it's been so lovely chatting to you. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been really interesting. As I said, talking to someone whose jewellery journey has been very different to mine and lots of my contemporaries. And I'm sure everyone listening will have got loads out of it. So that's been brilliant. Thank you so much, Louise. All right, and see you soon.
See you very soon.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next part. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Optopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.